another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter.
Hello, this is Jack Spirko with yet another edition of the Survival Podcast, one man's view of the changing world and changing economic times, the things we can do to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Folks, today you have me on a morning, and I haven't done a weather report here in Texas for a while, but we've had some clouds roll in the last couple days, and it's been gloomy and dark and absolutely, in my opinion, beautiful, because it hasn't been over 100 degrees for a few days now, and right now it's 81, and we're expecting a high in the low 90s, and by the evening it should be back down in the low 80s. As soon as the sun hits, you know, gets off its precipice. So I'm pretty happy right now, and my garden's doing well and got a little rain last night, so I'm in a great mood, so hopefully I can make this a great podcast. I don't have any stuff from the news or current events or anything like that today. We're just going to stick to our subject matter today. And what we're going to talk about are some underrated, I think, skills for surviving, or things that aren't talked about enough, or some of the things that are talked about, maybe just my unique vision of why you should improve those skills, or certain areas of those skill sets that maybe get either underappreciated or under-discussed by survivalists. And I think one of the biggest ones, and this is one I just don't hear discussed very often at all, is carpentry. And I don't really, you know, I've never been to a survivalist forum and seen a carpentry forum or a construction forum or how to build stuff forum. And maybe some of you guys that run forums or are highly active in forums and know the people that own and run them, maybe this is a good topic to add. I mean, if you think about it, there's so many things in the future that we may need that we either won't have the money to pay somebody else to do for us, there won't be somebody else available to do them for us, or the money that we have will be so worthless that nobody will take it to do these things for us. Additionally, if you can do some basic carpentry, not only can you provide a service to yourself, but it may in the future, as we, you know, we do have the potential at some point in the future to move to more of a barter-based regional economy. And I think that, you know, that can be by disaster or by design. There are many people that are starting to reach out and form groups with each other that practice modern homesteading, and kind of in the vein of the show, to live a good life when times get tough, or even if they don't, they're moving more and more to, you know, almost a regional currency based on barter. And I might do a show on that someday. I don't quite know enough about the people that are doing it yet to speak with authority on it, so I'm going to put that off. But that is occurring. So any skill that you can add, it gives you an ability to participate more in a barter economy in the future. And there's a lot of ways to develop the skill of carpentry. One is to just start, you know, pick a little project and go out and do it and figure out all the stuff you need and start working. And you know, there's no teacher-like experience, especially with something that's a hands-on skill like carpentry. And as I mentioned in the podcast yesterday, one of the things that you could do is maybe go find a construction company or maybe go volunteer with Habitat for Humanity or something like that and get around some people that know real construction techniques and learn some of the ways that they do things and how they do things and how to use certain tools that you may not be familiar with. All I can tell you is that carpentry for millennia was a very, very valuable skill. I can think of one carpenter in particular that kind of changed the world. And I'll leave that to you because I don't get preachy from here, but that's something to think about. And, you know, even if you're not kind of the religious type of individual, if you think about the fact that, you know, the founder of Christianity was a carpenter over 2,000 years ago, and that was a profession then, and it's a profession today. It is a testament to the value of that skill set. People that can build things have power. I mean, beyond just the you know, future preparedness of developing some carpentry skill set, think about the fact that if you develop that skill set, you can do a lot of things for yourself around your home, and if times don't get tough, you can increase the value of your home by doing things like building decks and things like that and save a ton of money by doing a lot, you know, most of the labor or even all of the labor yourself or with friends. So that's a skill that I really suggest that you kind of go out of your way to develop just a little bit. Invest in things like, you know, plans on how to build certain structures and things like that. Go buy, you know, a half-price bookstore or something like that and pick up some deck planning books and some other maybe shed building books and things like that, because, folks, a shed can become a house or a secondary structure really easily, but you got to know how to put it together. So that's one skill set I really think that you should develop. I also think you might want to think about, in that vein, developing a skill set to work with rough wood or logs, because, you know, if you do end up in a true kind of disaster scenario, especially with a financial meltdown, which I think is our biggest threat right now, you may not be able to run down to Home Depot. You may run out of, you know, nice straight squared wood. So knowing how to utilize, you know, actual straight lumber out of the woods might be a good idea too, be it for rough structures or even, you know, splitting and giving it some level of square and learning how to do some of the things like that. It's a little more complicated. It may be not something you want to completely specialize learning right now, but it's probably a good thing to familiarize yourself with at least. Now, the next skill that I'm going to talk about, I'm going to be kind of brief on, because it does get discussed a great deal. There are forums within all survivalist communities about this subject, but I think a lot of times it's maybe not fully comprehended or fully embraced by a lot of people. I think a lot of people are thinking, well, that is after the disaster that I'm going to step into that skill set, and maybe it's discussed and thought about and planned for, but it's not really learned, and that's gardening. And gardening specifically to the point where you can produce food, harvest food, store food, and reserve seed to plant again. And learning how to do things like succession cropping, where you're having a constant supply of food over much of the year. Learning how to do things like build greenhouses, so kind of combining that skill set with carpentry so that you can produce some level of food for yourself during the times of the year where you don't have the ability to grow things outside. Learning how to do container gardening, learning how to be creative, learning how to garden certain things that can be, you know, like potatoes and some other things can actually be left in the ground a lot longer than people realize. And that's a great way to store them. Carrots is another one that you can do that with. So gardening, I think, is something that people need more practical hands-on experience with. I've done a lot of shows on gardening. You might want to just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and look at our tag cloud on the right-hand side of the site and click on gardening in the tag cloud, and you'll pull up all the shows on gardening. And let me give you some of my thoughts on gardening as a whole, but I think everybody should be gardening. And it's more than just producing food to reduce the cost of your cash outlay right now. It's that I've seldom talked to a person that plants their very first garden and says, man, it just worked out great. I had all kinds of food and everything grew beautifully and nothing died on me and I had no problems with pests and my ground was great and I got it right the first time. You know, they might have had a good crop of one or two plants, but they usually lose a couple, and there's a learning curve to gardening. And I think if you wait until you need a garden to start gardening, it's kind of like waiting until you need food to start storing food. It kind of goes in the same vein. It might be worse, because as long as the shelves ain't empty and as long as you have money, you could go out and buy 2 years' worth of food tomorrow. But you cannot go out tomorrow with a shovel, break ground, and produce food in a week. And even the normal time to harvest, you know, something fast like greens or radishes, you can't guarantee yourself a harvest starting from nothing. And if you know, the worst happens in the wintertime, then you're stuck and you don't have a greenhouse yet. There's just a lot of good reasons to get active with gardening now and develop the skill. So when I say it's an underappreciated survival skill, I'm not really talking about the fact whether it's mentioned or not. What I'm talking about is people actively developing the skill of gardening, and that's very important. And your skill set will be unique to your environment, what you want to grow, what your climate's like. And you need to start now, because if the climate gets worse in your area, either by cooling, drying out, or getting hotter, any of those three, you'll have to have an understanding of what works and what doesn't work so that you can kind of coax your crops through those tough times. So it's really an important skill, and I think when you view it that way, it's often overlooked. The third skill, I think, is something I've absolutely never heard anybody describe as a survival skill in my life. And I think it may be one of the most critical skills to surviving if we end up in kind of that post-apocalyptic era, you know, where we really have this regional barter economy going and everything. And it's basic selling slash bartering. I think people are kind of afraid of learning the skill of selling if they're not salespeople. I think there's a big negative stigma about selling. I wrote an entire book along with a partner of mine named Neil Franklin called The Inner Salesman. And that's actually available at innersalesman.com if you'd like to look it up. I really don't want to do a big plug for my own product here, but I'm actually going to give that book away as kind of a secondary prize in the listener appreciation contest, a few of those as well. But that kind of gives you my, you know, that I do take selling seriously, and I built a lot of my career with it, and I've built companies with it. But beyond just being able to sell somebody a computer system or, you know, a marketing package or a data network infrastructure like I used to sell, selling is inherently important to all walks of life. I mean, if you think about, let's go from practical to extreme. On the practical matter, we take a child through his entire life and we tell him, don't ask strangers for money, don't ask questions of people that shouldn't have to give you an answer, be polite to everyone, all these, you know, things like don't take things from strangers, don't ask for things from strangers, all this negative programming, and a lot of it's important that we do it because, you know, you don't want a kid running out and jumping in a car with a stranger, but all of that programming also has a negative effect, and we tend to not do a good job as parents turning it back around as they get older and saying, well, in certain situations you have to be more outgoing, etc. Now we have an 18-year-old coming out of high school, needing to go to college, he has to go interview to get himself into a prestigious university because that's what he wants to do, or get his first job, and he's got all this apprehension built up because he doesn't know how to sell himself, because basically he's been told that selling himself is wrong and manipulative and he shouldn't do it. All right, that's just a mess that society crams down his throat, and parents do to a degree as well. I'm not being hard on parents here, folks. It's just reality. I mean, if you think about how many times you tell a kid no versus yes, it makes it real clear what I'm talking about. So selling and not knowing how to do it really has a negative impact in a practical life, but if you get into a point where you don't know how to barter, sell, and negotiate, when we're in this place where we're having to depend on each other at a regional level for this stuff to work itself out, and we're going to have to go to a neighbor and say, this is what I have, what can I get for it? And you don't have that skill, you know, tuned and honed and understood, then you're going to have real problems. Because you're going to get either taken advantage of, or in many situations, you're not going to know how to behave naturally when you're in that situation. And you're going to be in a time and place where people are naturally not trusting of each other. And one of the most important skills that any good salesperson can learn is to be natural. To be completely natural in the process, to speak the way that I speak to you every day in this podcast, not to be manipulative, not to try to go out and get somebody. That's not selling. That's conning. It's being a shyster. It's being a con artist. It's an amateur salesman. A professional salesman is a consultant, speaks with authority, and has the best interest of all parties involved in mind when he's negotiating. Because negotiation is only negotiation if everybody wins. So that's an important skill set. Again, that's something I've never heard talked about, but it's really something that behooves you to learn a little bit about the process so that you're prepared to better exist and thrive in a regional economy. The next one I hear some talk about, but it's almost always in the wilderness survival context of, you know, land navigation, using a map and a compass, understanding a GPS and things like that. But I think a lot of people really could brush up on their map skills, their map and navigational skills, including, you know, using a GPS if necessary, including using a compass, including using programs like Google Maps, but right down to a very basal thing of simply knowing at all times what direction north is when you're around roads. I mean, the biggest reason it's hard to navigate in the wilderness is because where's north? When you're in the trees, you can't see the sun, or it's dark out, you can't see the sun, or there's clouds, you can't see the sun, you can't get any bearing, right? And it's hard to tell which way is straight because you can be slowly making a bend and not realize it because it's hard to see landmarks. So with that being the case, with my military background and growing up hunting on the mountains and having to be able to deal with those situations, when I'm on in a place where there's streets and I know one street's east or west or north or south, especially with highways where they pretty much predominantly run that way, it just always struck me that everybody would have an intrinsic understanding of which direction they were going and where they lived, and if you were going to go from your house to the mall, what general direction the mall was from your house without pointing. It's either north, it's west, it's east, it's south. Unfortunately, I found out that's not true. And I found that out through meeting somebody that I won't name because she'll be mad at me. But when I first started talking about direction with this person, she wasn't real sure which way north was from her house, and I have a lot of respect for this person's intelligence. All right? And today she could tell you which way's north from the house and could get around and things like that. But it's been striking to me how many people are not really aware of direction. Just that basic direction instinct. So, if you're one of those people, I mean, I know a lot of you guys that are like wilderness guys and are going, what's this guy talking about right now? I mean, I can get anywhere I need to go. That's fine, but can your wife, can your brother, can your uncle, can your cousin, can your sister, can your daughter, can your son? You know? And unless the answer is yes to all of them, maybe you got some, you know, gentle nudging to do. And also just understanding how to read maps, interpret maps, basic street maps, for God's sakes. I think that, you know, when I went to high school, they taught us that in school, like junior high, actually, how to read maps. I don't know how much map reading kids are getting in school anymore. Basic understanding of distances, being able to look at the legend and see, well, this is, you know, 15 miles, so that means that this distance is, with this windy road, is right at about 40, things like that, 40 miles. That's going to take me this far out of my way. I'm going to use this much extra gas. Things like that, I think that, you know, that's something that people really need to work on, is being able to read and interpret maps, and being able to draw maps as well for other people to use with an understanding that north is always up. Another thing that just drove me crazy, I started meeting people that would actually draw a map where north wasn't up on the vertical axis of the map, and I was like, I don't even understand how anybody could draw a map where north isn't up. But you know what? People do it. And they do it based on, you know, kind of just their, you know, when they don't know what direction north is from where they're at, they just draw it as they see it in their head. And without that common frame of reference, that's why every map that you ever open has north to the top. The globe always has north to the top because we had to decide on some place that was up. And folks, I know this may seem really basic, but I'm telling you, you probably have people in your family that need some help with this. And if you need some help with this, start working on it, because it's going to be important. Another area that I don't see as much discussion about developing the skill as I think we should really focus on is food storage methods, ways to store and preserve food. I see a lot of talk about canning and pickling and recipes and things like that, but I don't really see people discussing it as a skill. And I think that you need to understand that canning, that pickling, that even just basic cooking methods are skills. And that the only way to really develop those skills is to start doing them at least a little bit. So even if you're not into really long-term storage right now, it probably behooves you, to as simple as canning and pickling is, to do a little bit of it every year. To make a few things every year. Just to familiarize yourself with the process. To understand things like, how much heat does this take? If I had to do this with a charcoal grill or a wood fire, how would I do it then? You know, what if I couldn't just turn on the electric stove? Things like that. Just learn. Even if you use the electric stove to do it, it'll go a long way to teaching you kind of how important temperature control is and things like that. Things like making jerky. I did a podcast on a bunch of different methods of storing food, and one of the things I talked about at length was making biltong. I think biltong is something every survival-minded person should go out and learn to make. I don't care if you go out and make 1 pound of it from 1 pound of beef, just to familiarize yourself with the process. And if you go to survivalpodcast.com from this podcast, I'll link back to that one. So if you haven't heard it, you can listen to how to make biltong. Biltong is like an African form of beef jerky, sort of. It's more like a dry pickling method for meat. I think it's probably one of the most phenomenal ways I've ever found to store meat, and it's an important skill to develop as a survivalist. I think a lot of our mountain men in the United States in the early, you know, 1800s, as the West was being settled, would have been a lot happier in many situations if they'd known how to make biltong instead of just jerky. Because it's got its own unique value. So different methods of food storage, from smoking to dehydrating to canning to to pickling, all of these things. I think you should at least do a little bit of it every year. Put a little bit of food away with it every year. Learn how to do it, because it's going to be important when you're trying to, you know, save a whole bunch of food that you've mastered how to do it right. That is not the time to make mistakes. I guess I can sum up all of these skills that you're learning with something that I was told by a gentleman that's my friend from the former Soviet Union named Val Ryazanov, who used to be part of the KGB. And what he told me is their philosophy was those who sweat the most in peace bleed the least during time of war. And that's really what this is all about, is learning how to do these things and actually getting practical hands-on experience, or at least an educational level, an intellectual level, intuitive understanding of how they work, so you have some frame of reference, some starting point. Another thing that I don't really see discussed in great detail, especially as being developed as a skill set, is developing things like primitive cooking techniques, such as cooking with solar ovens, cooking over open fire, cooking with hot coals and using Dutch ovens. There's many methods of cooking outside of firing up the stove or firing up the grill, but as soon as you take away that precise control of heat, and you have to deal with open flame and other things like that, then a lot of the rules about what works change. And as those things change, you know, it gets a little more difficult to produce food that you're going to be happy with. So, again, that's another one of those things. I think that the time to learn is now. If you can, you know, get away, a lot of suburban areas, you might not be able to do this, but in a lot of areas you could. I mean, at my house we have, you know, a fire pit. And especially in the fall and the winter, we'll go out sometimes and have a little outside fire. You know, just do a little cooking over that beyond sticking a weenie on a stick and roasting it like we all did when we were kids. You know, get a Dutch oven. Learn how to make meals with Dutch ovens. First of all, you're going to be really happy with the results. It's a wonderful way to cook. You know, you set the Dutch oven at the edge of the coals, and you put some coals on the lid, and it just makes wonderful meals. But on the other side of that, you're also training yourself for an eventuality that may come where, you know, either you don't have the ability to use the stove in the house, or you can, but it's going to cost a lot more, you're going to have a lot less, so you use it very sparingly, so you're looking for ways, at least a few times a week, to not use the stove. Cooking outside, campfire, Dutch oven, great way to do that. Solar oven, great way to do that. Learn different methods of smoking food. From conventional smoking methods where there's actually quite a bit of heat involved, to cold smoking methods where you're actually building a fire pot somewhere else and you're piping the smoke over to a cool smoke tower for smoking that generally results in foods that can be stored for quite a long time. You know, learn to preserve food in ways like how to make bacon, I think, is a great thing that people can learn. And to make really dry cured bacon takes like 9 months. But it's an interesting process to learn. Learn how to make hams. Learn how to make, you know, learn how to preserve meat specifically in ways that will allow it to last a very long time without refrigeration if need be. Beyond, again, just jerky. I'm telling you right now, you can get real tired of eating very thin, crumbly, dried meat. So really improving your skill set at doing different food storage methods and primitive cooking methods combined, I think, are things that are overlooked and underrated, and they're things that are easy for you to start doing and start learning how to do right away, right now, that even if times don't get tough, hey, you're going to eat better and you're going to save money, so why not do them? And my seventh skill set that I think really doesn't get talked about, and really should get talked about, are what I call the organizational skills. And organizational skills are indeed a skill. It's like some people just seem to be naturally good organizers. They keep things organized well. Everything looks neat around them. And I'll tell you what, folks, I am not one of them. I am terrible at keeping my desk organized. I'm terrible at keeping my office organized. My wife refers to my home office as a hellhole. or a crap hole, depending on what mood she's in, all right? So I don't have really good organizational skills when it comes to just keeping stuff in the right place. But I do kind of know where everything is, and one thing I am good about is documentation of everything. That's how I stay organized, because if nothing else, I can always go back to the plan, see where I'm at, see what I'm supposed to do next. So you have to work within your own limitations, but finding a way to keep as much organization as you can in your planning and in your life is important. It's also important to develop that skill to a point where you can be a coordinator for other people. Because odds are, if you're survival-minded, if something does go wrong, you're going to end up in a place where you're going to have to assume a leadership role. And one of the most important skills that a leader can have is organization. To understand, I need to figure out very quickly what I can delegate to somebody else to do. And to delegate the right thing that that person's going to be capable of doing, and they're going to succeed at doing, so that I can go on with the things that I've got to get done and I've got to worry about, not worry about that anymore. That comes a lot from being able to be an organized person and to logically think out everything that you need to do to compensate for the situation you're in. Developing that logic set is probably the most important thing. And I mean, you can even do things like the basic puzzles or Squidoo or something like that. All these different things, Sudoku, I guess is what they call it, where you do the number games. And I'm not good at those, but if you like those are things that develop the mind, you know, from a logical standpoint. But start just occasionally looking at a thing that you think is a real problem and see if you can come up with a logical solution for it, even if you have no power to enact it. I mean, every time the government does something stupid, I try to come up with, well, what would I do if I could take control of this problem and solve it? Even if no one's going to listen to me, what would I do? And that's impacted my life in so many situations, just with business and at work and dealing with other people, where situations come up, and the first thing my mind does is go, okay, how do I fix it? How do I compensate for it? How do I deal with it? That's one of the most important skills that you can develop. And you can do it for free. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to invest anything. Just begin this process. Start looking around you. Look for things that are wrong, that are incorrect, that are problems, that are dangerous. Logically think through the entire process, and in your head, even if you don't write it down or do anything with it, come up with a solution. Do that once a day with one problem, and I'm sure you can find a problem a day. Even if it's outside of your life, and in fact, it may be better to start out with problems that don't impact you at all. Things that are in your, you know, not even in your circle, things you don't even care about, really. Because then you'll be detached from them, you'll be able to be as logical as possible. Where if you're dealing with something that's personal in nature, that you really care about, then emotion takes over. So start with very detached problems, and what will happen is then you'll get into a point where you do have to solve a problem that's personal. And you'll be able to go into that detached organizational mode. Logically think through the process and come up with the best solution in spite of your emotions, not because of them. Because when you make a decision based on emotions during a crisis, it almost always leads to a bigger crisis. Because you're not thinking clearly. You know, I shouldn't trust this person, but your emotions tell you I shouldn't be so untrusting. You know you should get the hell out of your car and start walking, but your emotions tell you, I should really stay here and wait for somebody to help me. Those are the types of scenarios. Your child has been injured, and you know what you should do is stop and address the injury, but you freak out and run to the hospital while they bleed. These are the things that happen when you stop thinking logically and you stop being organized, at least in your mind. So when I say organizational skills, if you can develop your organizational skill set where you can run your home completely documented, everything understood, do the type of documentation of survival planning that I've podcasted on before, and have that type of order to your entire life, great. But even if you can't, even if you're like me, you're an entrepreneur, you're a little bit eccentric, you're a little bit obsessive compulsive, you got a little bit of ADD going on. I mean, I got all those things, folks. Still get that logical process in your head, because it's something you carry with you. It's like a Swiss Army knife in your mind. And it is probably the most valuable thing a survivalist can develop, is that mindset that no matter what happens, I'm going to pull myself 100 feet back from it, evaluate this situation as though it doesn't affect me at all, like I'm watching it on TV. I'm going to come up with the most logical solution possible. I'm going to begin to immediately enact it. And if I need other people to participate in it, I'm going to confidently tell them what needs to be done. Because in a crisis, folks, when someone stands up and says, you need to do this, you need to do this, this is what we all need to do, let's go now, 99 times out of 100 people comply. As long as it's said with confidence. Because they're looking for leadership because they don't know what to do. And that could be your family you're saving, and it could be total strangers. But it's developing that organizational and logical skill set that makes that possible. So those are my 7 skills, and I hope this has been a good show. I tried to make it a little bit different than some of the things we've done before, and I can tell by looking at my timer, I've come in right at 30 minutes, and I've gone a little long recently, and I want to keep these things down around the 30-minute mark, so I think this worked out well. Again, I want to remind you that we do have a listener appreciation contest going on right now. If you go to www.thesurvivalpodcast.com, click on listener appreciation contest, you can get full details and enter that contest, and you can win a free iPod Nano or some other cool prizes. Like I said, I'm going to be giving out some of my books hand autographed on sales. I know that's not really a survival topic, but as we covered today, it kind of is. And the other thing I want to point out, if you have suggestions, comments, questions, again, go by the blog at thesurvivalpodcast.com. Comment on any episode that you'd like to comment on, not just this one. And if you want to get in touch with me, there's a link there that says Contact Us. Click on that. Fill out the form. And as I've said before, I do not publish my email on the blog because I don't like getting any more spam than I have to. But if you comment, if you send me a contact by that form, I respond to, you know, 99.9% of my contacts. You'll have my real email then. I don't mind giving it to my listeners. I like to hear from you. So again, remember, at the Survival Podcast, we're here to help you live a better life if times get tough or even if you don't. I'm your host, Jack Spirico. I hope you tune in tomorrow for another edition of the Survival Podcast.
You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter because it all gets spent.